everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we talk about different subjects involving UFOs or cryptozoology, ghosts, past lives. Tonight our topic is near-death experiences. This is not a topic we've actually discussed before, so I'm very, very excited. And our guest is Shelley Yates. We're going to be talking about her near-death experience, and I'm calling this show Fire the Grid, and you'll find out why after we talk to Shelley. Now, before I actually introduce our amazing guest, I want to give you just a little bit of UFO news, because we've got some stuff going on. I want to talk a little bit about UFOs over Mexico, France, England, and Canada. I'll make this brief, because I really do want to get to our guest. But what's really interesting is some news that's happening over Mexico City. Now, just recently, about 3 weeks ago, according to the Journal of Hispanic Ufology, as translated by Scott Corrales, on March 27, 2007, approximately 13 airline mechanics managed to observe the maneuvers of an unidentified flying object, which was hovering directly over the maintenance hangar. At the time, they were actually installing an airline engine. And this sighting occurred between 8 and 8:40 a.m., so this is a pretty amazing daylight sighting. And Mexico City, as I'm sure my listeners know, is a very, very active UFO spot. And just 3 weeks later, there was another sighting in the same exact area. This was on April 6th. Numerous people over Mexico City saw this very bright silver object, which hovered in place and then eventually moved away quickly. And there was observers actually at Mexico City International Airport who watched this through binoculars. So yeah, if you want to see a UFO, that's one place to go. Now, a little bit about Canada. Chris Rutkowski, who is a leading investigator in Canada, has just released his reports of last year, and he's reported 736 sightings reported across Canada in last year, which would be 2006, and that's about just over two sightings a day. And what's interesting, he says almost all of these sightings involve unexplained lights, and they don't get a lot of really close encounter reports. Probably the most interesting of the reports, he said, was of a black triangular-shaped object that was seen along the Newfoundland coast. So, and he also says that there's a problem because there's a lot of websites now which are also taking reports. So there's probably a lot more sightings going on than just the 736. But now to France. This is really interesting. As you all know, I'm sure, I hope you know, France has just released an official website which is revealing 50 years of their own UFO research. There's 1,600 cases, and what's very interesting is this is broken down into four different categories: identified, probably identified, insufficient data, and unidentified. Now, 9% are identified, 33% are probably identified, 30% is insufficient data, and 28% is unidentified. So this is actually really interesting, and some of the cases they've released are very, very interesting. Now, one was really bizarre. They labeled it a hoax because there was a man who claimed to have been abducted, and they took blood tests, and these blood tests failed to show that he had been weightless in space travel, so they concluded it was a hoax. So I don't know exactly what that means, but one really interesting case involved two children who were watching over the family cows on August 29th, 1967, when they spotted four small black figures, beings about 47 inches tall, and they ran away and told their parents, but before they did, they watched these beings float up into the air and get sucked into a very large craft, about 15 feet in diameter, which was hovering over the field. And when they came back to the field, they found a large burn spot and a very strong sulfuric odor. So it's a very, very interesting case. And there's a lot of other cases that they're showing. the investigator, the leader of the team, Jacques Patinet, says that there are about 100 new cases each year reported. And he says 99% of these cases are people are totally sincere, but most of them, he believes, involve conventional things, not necessarily UFOs, or extraterrestrials, rather. And the last bit of news I want to report, let me see, I have it right here. Yes, is England. The Defense Ministry right now has just released a statement. Derek Twiggs, the junior defense minister, has reported that they have received 714 reports of UFOs in the last 6 years. So that's over 100 a year. So this seems to be pretty much the standard in each of these countries, 100, 200 reports each year. So there's lots of stuff going on. It's very exciting. I can't wait to see what the future brings. But tonight, our subject is near-death experiences. And our guest is Shelley Yates. Now, for those of you who don't know what a near-death experience is, this is when someone actually has an out-of-body experience, usually after having experienced some type of physical trauma. Raymond Moody wrote a book about this in 1975 called Life After Life. It was extremely popular. Within 2 years, it had gone through 22 printings. And for every year since then, for 20 years, it sold over 100,000 copies each year. So this is a very popular subject. Betty Eady's book, Embraced by the Light, also broke publishing records. It was a number one New York Times bestseller in 1992, and I believe the best-selling book for that year, and caused a bidding war for the paperback rights. Another really popular near-death book was Daniel Brinkley's Saved by the Light. And what's interesting about his book is he revealed prophecies given to him by the beings of light that he encountered, and these involved earth changes. And this is actually a popular theme among many people who have had very extensive near-death experiences, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight, so I'm really excited. The title of tonight's show is Fire the Grid, and again, our guest is Shelley Yates. And in November 2002, Shelley was driving with her four-year-old son when it skidded off the road, and she had an amazing near-death experience. And well, I'll just let her talk about it. Shelley, thank you very much for coming onto the show tonight.
Hi, Preston. It's nice to be here. Well, it's very late here in Nova Scotia.
yeah, I know. Thank you so much for staying up late. What is it, like 1 a.m., 2?
It's 1 a.m., yeah. Well, that's good. I like your topics already.
Oh, good. Well, yeah, you know, I've read all the books on near-death experiences. They're just so, I think, really inspiring and give me hope for life after death. I think it's the best evidence we have for life after death.
Definitely.
And, what did you believe in life after death before you had this experience?
I was certainly open to the possibility of life after death. I was more open to the possibility of extraterrestrials than I was any divine source in life. I used to say that I had the power of one and you're looking at her, because I had no connection to any source other than my own life and my own survival. And I had experienced a great deal of sexual abuse and hardship in my earlier life, and it had affected me greatly, and I was actually a very suicidal person for 20 years. So when I drowned and died in that car accident, to me that was a release. And
wow.
Being able to go home or to go wherever I was, as long as I was able to leave the earth. So it was, to me, it would have been a time of joy to be able to die. But now, 4 years later, I'm thrilled I didn't. There's so many exciting things happening in this earth.
Well, so I just don't even know where to start. How did this all happen?
I can tell you about the accident. November of 2002, my son and I were driving along a country road, so it wasn't well traveled, and I hydroplaned on a small river coming across. There was a pond on the left and a pond on the right, and the water was flowing out of the pond on the left into the pond on the right, so it was causing like a little river.
Right.
And as my car entered this body of water, the car was drawn towards the guardrail. And I remember thinking, oh, no, you know, I'm going to beat up my car. But what happened was my tires on the driver's or on the passenger side of the car slipped up on the guardrail and came along almost like a roller coaster. So the car was on a tip. And
as
I came across, the car flipped over the guardrail and into the lake. So the car landed upside down on the lake, and I looked at my son, and I asked him if he was okay, and he said, yeah. And I said, okay, well, Mommy's going to put down the window, and we're going to crawl out, because I thought I had landed in a bog, you know, something marshy.
Right.
And when I put up my finger on the window to open the window, it only came down around 4 inches, and then the electricity, of course, electric windows and water don't match. So everything stopped, and the water just barreled into my car. So I looked at my son and I said, okay, honey, we're going to have to swim out of this car. And I was really, really calm because I was a national scuba diver. I did swim teams. I was always in the water, so I felt sure I was getting out of this car. So he looked at me and he said, okay, Mommy. And with that, the water came up over us. So I had said, take a deep breath. And I had my hand on his coat and my hand on the door. So the car filled up with water, and I went to open the door and it wouldn't open. And I tried his door, and it wouldn't open, and the windows wouldn't open. So, of course, I was feeling pretty panicky by this time because now I couldn't get out of the car. So I took my son's body, and I put it in the back seat, hoping that there would be air in the back seat. However, we were upside down, and if there was any air in that car, it would have been in the trunk. And then I began to fight with the doors and the windows and push on things trying to get out of that car. Anyway, a few moments passed, however, I guess long it takes for a human to need to breathe, and it hit me that I needed to breathe, and I breathed in the water, and the water rushed into my lungs just like liquid fire.
Oh.
It was, anybody who says drowning is a nice way to die, it's not my experience, because it was terrifying, and it's like fire in my lungs.
Oh.
And then I went into what I would call a full panic, so I started just splash around the car trying to find my son's body. And to no avail, I couldn't find his body because his body had actually wedged in the window in the back. And that's when this being whispered in my ear. And it said, you need to relax. And first it came really commanding. And it's funny because they must have known me. I don't take commands well. So it changed from a commanding voice of, you know, you need to relax, into a really cooing, loving voice, almost parental, and started to explain to me that they were coming and that I was going to be given a way to save myself and my son and that everything was going to be fine. And, well, I just explained to you that I had no God. I had no faith in anything. So this was really unusual. And I remember this being saying to me, if you continue to fight the water, you're going to drown. And my response was, no shit, Sherlock. You know, I was like, what, you know, I'm getting a comedic ghost on my deathbed. This is crazy. Anyway, the voice all of a sudden infused me with this wonderful energy and knowing that everything was going to be all right. And what I had to do was give myself over and die. So I did.
Wow.
I stopped fighting the water. I never tried to breathe again. I never tried to find my son's body again. Like, everything else went out of my head except to give yourself over and die. And I did. And I was trapped in that car underwater for 15 minutes. So, you know, you and I shouldn't be having this conversation.
Right.
Because I should be brain dead.
Wow.
So I was trapped in the car for 15 minutes, and when they came and got me, they pulled me out of the car, and they did 7 minutes of CPR. So now we're up to 22 minutes. And at the end of the CPR, the guy said, look, she's gone. We're not going to get her back. And with that, I sat straight up, and I said, get my baby out of the lake.
Oh.
Of course, it took another 5 or 6 minutes to get back in the car and try to find his body, but they couldn't find his body. So a boom truck came and pulled the car out of the lake, and his body was floating in the back window.
Could you see what was going on before they actually came and resuscitated you? Do you know what I mean?
Well, when I died, you know how, and then you just said you read several of the books about near death. My near death experience was somewhat different because I didn't go down the tunnel and into the light and find, you know, this loving place that people describe.
Right.
My consciousness was taken up into a glass room in the sky with six beings.
Okay.
And they were telling me about life. And they were telling me that they were going to give me the information to save my son. And they kept me there until I guess they put me back in my body. And when I came back, I didn't remember any of this until I was faced in the hospital with having to unplug my son. And by the time I got to the hospital, they had declared him brain dead, and they had said that all his organs, his internal organs, were filled with blood, and that there was nothing viable left,
so now,
and that I should unplug.
Let's backtrack a little bit, because this is very interesting. You, right after you're resuscitated, you just sat right up. Now, were you totally conscious at this point and able to walk around?
Yeah. Well, they didn't.
Did you breathe and everything?
I was breathing. Yeah. I threw up a great deal of twigs and moss and bugs and sticks and things. And then they put me in an ambulance and took me to the hospital. In the meantime, I was screaming for my son, who was being put into a different ambulance and taken to a different hospital.
Oh, okay.
So we were literally separated at that time. But the entire way to the hospital, I cried like a wounded animal because I thought I had killed my son. And
wow.
He was dead.
At this point, had you remembered the out-of-body part of the experience?
No. No, at this point, I was in what I would call pure survival mode.
Okay.
I got to the hospital. I was on death's door, is what the doctor said, that my blood pressure was through the roof and that they were afraid I was going to have a heart attack because of the stress. So when I asked to go to my son's hospital, they said, no way, you can't go. But over the course of a half an hour, with the instructions from the doctors, because I said, what do I need to do to get to the hospital at my son's? And they told me the things I had to do. And within a half an hour, my body had restored to its natural state, the right temperature, the right blood pressure. I was ready to go. So I stood up and I said, well, if you don't get me some clothes, I'm going naked. You know, it was like, I'm leaving whether you want me to or not.
Right.
And so I got to the hospital, and the doctors gave me the grave news about Evan and how bad he really was. And they said, we do have him on the machines, but we don't even think he's getting any oxygen because his lungs were so filled with blood, it showed on the CAT scans and MRIs. And so they said, we really encourage you to unplug your child and just let him die. And I said, look, I need a minute. And I went out in the hallway. And I heard, as clear as you and I talking right now, I heard, fill it up, fill it up, fill it up. And I said, what? What do you want me to fill up? And then I had a vision of a bucket floating in front of my face. And when I looked into the bucket, there was a little silvery blob of fluid. And they said, fill it up. And I said, you want me to fill up the bucket? And then I heard this ding, 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 ding. And I was like, wow, okay, this is like a Bob Barker moment. I got it right, okay. So then I said, well, what do you want me to put in the bucket? And when I lifted my head up from looking in this, you know, vision of a bucket, everybody had a 4-inch colored mass around their body, which I thought, well, that must be aura, because I'd seen it on TV, you know. I certainly wasn't into the whole world of auras and things, but I'd seen it on TV.
Right.
And I said, you want me to put the aura in the bucket? And again, I heard ding, 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 ding. I was like, okay, right on. How do I do it? You know, because this was exciting. And then all of a sudden I had an infusion of memory. I remembered where they took me. I remember what they told me. And they said, we told you to follow the instructions. And if you follow the instructions, your son would come back to you. So here I was in the hallway talking to myself, looking at an imaginary bucket and getting information from these light beings that were the most magnificent beings. The love and joy that just in their presence is amazing.
What did they look like? Could you see them?
At that time, I hadn't seen them clearly, but over the past 4 years, I have seen them clearly. It's if they were made of liquid light, It's as if you could push your face into, if you could have a saran wrap of liquid light and push your face into it so that it clung to your features.
Right.
But it was liquid light, so you couldn't, you can't see eyebrows, but you see the outline of the eye, you know, so you could see a very androgynous, pleasant-looking face, but not details like I couldn't see blue eyes or that kind of thing because you couldn't see that part.
Wow.
So here I am in the hallway of the hospital, and they're giving me the instructions, and they're telling me that for 72 hours, what I have to do is transfer body energy from other humans into my son. And it's like a blood transfusion, and everybody can do this. The auric field that we have around our body can be transferred and can be shared. So what they told me to do was for 72 hours, rotate loving humans through his room, and give their gift. So what they wanted to do was give an infusion. So what they had to do was touch his body and transfer the energy from one human to another. And every time somebody did this, I would see the bucket, and in the field that of vision, I would see a hand come in with a styrofoam cup and pour liquid into the bucket.
Wow.
So it was like the bucket was really, really old, and I thought, oh, that's my son's, you know, he must be an old soul, as you've heard. And the bucket, you know, the styrofoam cups were like new energy. To me, that's what it represented.
Right, right.
So over 72 hours, people went into his room. They gave their gifts. They shared their energy. They had to tell my son of their joy. So in your case, you like UFOs, you would go in and talk about the things that bring you joy, like UFOs and all the excitement around that, right? It was to share mm-hmm. your personal gift. And, of course, he got worse and worse and worse. Every tube in his body was filled with blood. He was passing huge pieces of his bowels out of his diaper, and the doctors just kept getting more and more adamant that this is very grave and you need to unplug this boy. You know, he's dying. And I said, no, I need 72 hours. You know, these beings have told me I need 72 hours. And the doctor said, well, this is highly unorthodox. And I said, what do you care? You already said he's dead. And he couldn't fight with that.
Wow.
So he let me do the energy.
Hmm? The people you brought in were all family and friends and stuff like
family
that?
Family and friends, yeah. I called everybody I knew, even people I had casually dated. I asked if they would come to the hospital and share their energy. I'm sure they thought I was crazy.
did they come?
They did. Hundreds of people came. And we took over the entire floor of the hospital just outside of the ICU. And we transferred people through that room for 72 hours. Which is unheard of. You can imagine an ICU in a major hospital.
Wow. Wow.
So, at the end of the 72-hour point, I heard my girlfriend calling, Shelly, you've got to come. And I ran up the hallway, and when I went around the corner, here was my son sitting up in bed with his eyes opened.
Oh.
And I went in, and I sat on the bed next to him, and I said, do you know who I am? And he nodded his head, and the doctor said, that's reflex. Your son is brain dead.
Oh.
And I said, don't speak in front of my child like that. And I said, so I asked him, is my name Sheila? And he said, no. Like, he shook his head. And I said, is my name Joanne? Like, I went through names. And he looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, is my name Shelley? And he nodded his head. And I said, my son is completely there, so let's not talk about this anymore. So anyway, it took about 12 hours, I guess, before they decided to unplug him from everything because he was healed. He
wow.
didn't even have the burn marks on his chest. You know when they do the paddles to give you, to shock you back into life?
Right.
They use shock paddles. Well, they had burnt him 3 times on his chest.
Wow.
I
had no idea they left burn marks.
Well, these were little, it's not a burn mark. Well, yeah, it is a kind of a burn mark. But at the end of the 72-hour period, he didn't even have those. Nothing.
Wow.
All the tubes running out of his body that were carrying blood were running clear. So his urine was running clear, his bowels were clear. At the end of that time, he was so dead that he was smelling like rotten meat.
Oh.
So here we'd had a miracle. You know, it was incredible that I had come back at all. That was a miracle that didn't even get appreciated at that time because we had put so much energy into my son. So here we had a miracle, and it was wonderful, and I was happy, and I was going home. And that was the end of the story as far as I was concerned.
Right.
But these beings had a different agenda for me, and they gave me a period of time, probably of about 6 months, where I didn't hear any messages, I didn't experience any odd things happening. And then it started, and I was visited all the time by these beings, and there was great explanations about quantum physics and the co-ability to create and manifest the things that we desire, and that we were greatly loved on the other side, and it was their intention and their wish to assist us with the earth dilemmas that we're having right now.
Well, now, how did these visitations occur? I mean, was it in the dream state or like in your mind's eye? Or did you see full-blown apparitions?
Well, several things happened a lot. I had three different ways of communication. I would hear things in my right ear, clearly like you and I speaking on the phone. But
okay.
They were very short sentences, like fill it up was in my ear. And then I had things that would come through my chest, and what I would call it was a download, because it was something I didn't know anything about. And then I'd have a download in my sleep, and I'd wake up the next morning talking about something that I had no idea about. So that was really wild when those things would happen. And then the third way, I saw things, like visions, like the bucket. And oftentimes they would use visions. And in the early beginning of communication, I couldn't communicate like you and I are right now. It wasn't smooth and it wasn't flowing. So they used to use this method of dinging on a bell when I had the thing right. So I'd get
right.
And then they go ding, ding, ding. I'd like, okay, I got it. Okay, I got it. And that's how they spoke to me, was in these three manners. They spoke to me to give me the information about the world project that I'm involved in. But they came in the nighttime. It was like 3 o'clock every morning for 6 months. They came every morning at 3 o'clock. And they spoke.
This was 6 months following the actual experience.
Yeah. Well, it started in about July. And then it was just an onslaught of these visits of information about the world and energy, frequency, photons, stuff I really didn't know very much about. So anyway, it basically came about that they were giving me a world project, and they told me what I did for a dying boy with a small group of people, I could do for a dying planet with a large group. So the project was around giving Earth a jump start, you know, sending out an energy boost that was going to realign Earth and give it an energy jump shot to raise the frequency and set Earth on a path to healing.
So was this the first messages that started coming through? I mean, they talked about quantum physics, and I mean, what were the first messages that started coming through?
The first messages were about love and about the power of love and about the frequency of staying in a state of grace and being in a kind and considerate place as a human. Giving and sharing was the highest frequency of humanity, and that when we lived in that state, we were in balance with the universe. But when we weren't living in that state, we were living in a state below the natural line, and that there was no energy moving from divine source out in the cosmos, because we are like lightning rods on the earth, and the divine source or the energy of the cosmos passes through us and into the earth. So in essence, humanity has always been a lightning rod to feed Earth with the energy of the divine.
Okay,
and this
cool.
is what they explained to me.
So what we have to do is live in a state of love, and this will help heal the Earth,
yes.
is what you're saying.
When we lift our own personal fields and start to practice being true to our true self, which is compassion, love, and grace, then we are living in a state of grace that allows the energy from the universe to pass through us into the world, into our
wow.
earth,
okay.
and in essence, charge the earth.
All right, so those were the first messages, and then what did they talk about next?
Well, they went on about how to do this. I said, you know, well, it was easy to do it in a hospital room. I could bring people to the room. What is it you want me to do? And I was very resistant. I didn't want any part of this. I didn't want to be speaking to beings of any kind because I didn't want to be classified as weird.
Well, you know, I was going to say, what did your family think? Did you tell people about this at this point?
I was very selective who I was telling at this point, yeah. But my mother was very encouraging for me to go to a spiritual convention in Montreal. And I met Stephen Greer at that convention.
I know him well.
Yeah, well, Dr. Greer was the person who said, Shelley, this is real. This is legitimate. You've been contacted by beings from the same source that you're from, and they want to help us. And I said, well, here you go. Here's a project. Go ahead and do it. And he said, oh, no, it's not my project. And I said, well, somebody has to do it. And he says, well, I guess you're going to have to do it then. And I remember coming home from Montreal thinking, I'm not doing it. This is crazy. And here, of course, I am doing it. We're 4 months from the date, and it's been absolutely magnificent. We're up to 1 million hits a month on the website.
1 million a month? Good Lord.
1 million hits a month. Isn't that awesome?
So and it's been translated into different languages? The response to this is, like, phenomenal, huh?
The response to this is phenomenal. Well, on my website, when you open the site up, the first thing you're greeted with are 3 stones and a capstone, something like you'd see at Stonehenge. And these beings told me that this was an encoded message for the soul to wake up. And that it was time. That there was changes coming, and that the people who saw it and were ready, of course, you have to be opened to awakening, would indeed see truth in the project and would feel the truth in it and know that there was something here for the world and for them. So they told me stones on there as an awakening code or a symbol.
I went to your website and I was like electrified. I'm like, oh, I have to contact you.
Oh.
Wow.
Well, everything we've done is for free. Everything is for free. We have not charged a cent to anybody. Nobody charges for anything that we do. It's all sharing. And that's exactly where we have to move. We have to move towards sharing to rebuild this planet. You know, that's the first step. We have to realize that there's plenty for everyone and that we have to share.
Everything
that with this project has been based on that. And these beings have given me these instructions strictly. Never, never, never use this project for any money. And if you notice, the website doesn't even have ads.
Oh, wow.
Our website has nothing to make any money from it. The whole website has been followed. Every color, every symbol, everything on that site has been channeled. And, of course, at that time I didn't know what that was, but now I do.
This is really profound stuff. Well, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. Our guest tonight is Shelley Yates, and we're talking about her project, Fire the Grid. Now, this is the name of your website as well, right?
Yes, firethegrid.com. Yeah, go ahead.
Why is it called Fire the Grid?
Well, one of the first things they showed me, because you just asked a minute ago, actually, one of the first things they showed me the structure of our universe, and around our Earth field is a grid system that holds the energy of our Earth inside of it. And I liken it to almost an Earth aura. You know, we have an aura, or we have an energy field. Well, the Earth has one, too. But it's subdivided in grid systems. And each human being on the Earth holds one space in the grid. And they talked a lot about equality and understanding that even the richest man only holds one square of space. And no matter how much money you have, you can't buy another one. That's what you get. You know, so that's how equal we all are. The smallest animal and the most powerful human share one, they each get one grid space. And what it looks like is a hexagon of tubing, and there's a photon that fires around inside the tubing that keeps this hexagon lit. Well, these beings told me that we're in darkness and they can't even see us. That's how degenerated our field is.
Oh, my God.
And that if we didn't find a way to regenerate the Earth field, that there would be a complete deterioration and the Earth would suffer many catastrophes.
They say what kind of catastrophes?
The things I did see and that they did show me were water-based, tsunami type of things. But I didn't want to see that. That was very difficult to have visions and see those kind of things. So I asked very early in the relationship not to show me this kind of thing because I would rather focus on the hope that they were sending.
Right.
So that's what I decided to share, was the hope that they were sending. And they did say that there will still be some disasters in the Earth, but once we fire the Earth grid and realign the energy fields, that they will be lessened, that Earth will not have to undergo as many catastrophes as was the first wave would have presented.
Right.
So they gave me a date. They gave me a time. The date was July 17th, 2007. And, of course, it was we were into 2004 when this all began to unravel. And I went to see, when I saw Dr. Greer, he was just so wonderful at assisting me to see the truth in all this that I had to go home and follow the instructions. But once again, I didn't know how to build a website. I didn't know how to do anything. So I would ask these beings to bring me the right people. And sure enough, everybody I needed showed up.
Really?
And the website was built, and it was magnificent the way it unfolded. And I remember the very first night the website went up, I went to bed, and I remember saying, okay, if you're ready to do this, bring it on. You know, I'm ready to do it. And it was only a couple of days later I got a phone call from George Norrie, who does Coast to Coast. And he had me on his radio show without any provocation, without me looking for anything. It just came.
Wow.
And that has been what has happened with every single step of this project. I would ask for what I needed, and it would come. And the site has just grown and grown and grown. It's sharing the information at an incredible rate right now.
It's very, very interesting. I think it's a very profound thing. I mean, it's just amazing how many people this is affecting. So what is exactly supposed to happen on this date?
And how
do you know it's the right date? I mean, they told you this very clearly, huh?
Yep. They gave me the date and time very clearly. It was July 17th, 2007 at 11:11 Greenwich Mean Time. And, of course, my first understanding was, what the heck is Greenwich Mean Time? You know, go figure that one out. But these were the ones that validated for me things that I didn't know. I grew up, you just mentioned Newfoundland. I grew up in Newfoundland. It was a very simple community and, you know, very, very strict in the old ways. You know, people certainly didn't talk about any new ideas. So everything that I heard seemed very foreign to me and new, but I owed these beings a great debt of gratitude. And as far as I was concerned, I had no choice. The same way I had in the hospital, it was either unplug your son and let him die, or follow the instructions and use hope. Is that, you know, that was it. So here I was in the same position again. Either follow the instructions and tell the world the messages that they've given me, or walk away from it and just allow the world to, you know, whatever happens, happens.
Right. Well, what's really exciting is the proof that, of the healing of your son, is proof that, you know, this thing is for real, and this is a very profound thing that, you know what I mean?
Oh, definitely. Well, just in consideration, I went in that lake, I was 38 years old. I was very overweight. I was underwater for 15 minutes. So it's not like we can even pretend that I was just unconscious but still breathing. You know, it's like there was no possibility. So as far as I know, there's no other human on the earth that ever lived longer than 3 or 4 minutes and doesn't have brain damage in water. Now, I don't know about other near-death experiences. I met Raymond Moody. You mentioned him, too. I met him in Montreal, and we talked quite a bit about Danny and Brinkley because I resonated with Danny and Brinkley's story because he, too, had been given prophecy of some sort. Now, mine's not prophecy as much as directions or instructions of how to help ourselves. And it's all around raising our frequency. And what they explained to me was, as Earth moves through the Earth, right, or as Earth moves through the galaxy right now, we're headed for the Milky Way. And as we enter the Milky Way, we're headed to be in a conjunction in 2012, which is a lot of people are thinking is the end of the Mayan long day calendar. And there's a lot of ideas around the end of the world, the birth of a new world. But basically, as Earth moves into this new center, the frequency of this Earth is changing. It's not a judgment thing. It's not coming from any place of judgment. It simply is. It's a physics situation that as we move closer and closer to this galactic center in 2012, the frequency on the Earth is changing. And if we don't change with it, then we're going to find ourselves very, very uncomfortable. Well, you can imagine if you live at like 1,000 megahertz, but you're in a place that has 2,000 megahertz, you wouldn't feel comfortable.
Oh, okay. So this is why we have to raise our vibration, because the Earth's vibration is raising.
Right. Earth's vibration is rising, and that we have to find a way to rise our own vibrations. And that by firing the Earth grid, that several things were going to happen. One, we were going to light up the grid. So everybody who participates in firing the Earth grid, the tile that I talked about, the hexagon-shaped tile, is going to glow. It's going to light up. And it's going to radiate out and send that same universal consciousness throughout the grid system. So we're going to light up, and they're going to be able to see us. And we're also going to be able to recognize each other. This is what their instructions said. And that they're coming, and that they will be here to help in the event of catastrophe. But first, we have to follow the instructions.
Wow. So are they saying that these Earth changes are imminent then?
The Earth changes are definitely coming. The degree of what happens can be lessened by firing this Earth grid and realigning the frequencies of the people and the planet together and uniting them. So what their main goal is to unite humanity as one race and to start a new healing on the Earth with peace and prosperity for all. But this is just the first step. I believe that there's much more to come than this. They've recently given me a second date, but I don't have much more information on it yet. They often feed stuff to me in what I call snippets. You know, you get a little piece and you have to sit with it, and it's like, well, what does that mean? You know, and then you're waiting for the next little piece. And sometimes it feels as if there's, especially when they speak to me in my ear, it's like it's difficult for them to do that, to maintain the connection. So I think this is why I get it in little pieces. That's my idea about it.
Huh.
That's not something they've explained.
Right. So on this date, what is everyone on this hour?
Yeah.
For 1 hour, right? So what are we supposed to do?
Right.
Meditate?
Well, what they said was to find the thing in life that brings you joy and bliss. Now, in the very beginning, they told me what they wanted us to do was meditate and pray. And as I got more and more skilled at communicating with them, I was able to ask questions. And I said, well, what about the people who don't meditate and pray? And they said, well, what you have to do is find the thing in your life that brings you joy or bliss. And one of the examples they gave me was a guy comes home from work, and he kicks back in his easy chair with a can of beer and watches the football game. And he said, wow, this is living. You know, this is my bliss. I love this, right? What they have to add to that is thank you and gratitude for the experience that brings you such bliss. And when you do that, you lift your field. You lift the frequency of your own personal field to a higher state of joy. And that's the frequency that's coming. It's a much higher frequency. And the way we have to raise our field is through finding things that give us joy and then being thankful for the experience of being able to do that. Because we're all beings. Inside of us, each one of us is a living energy being. And it's capable of adjusting its field. And that's what they want us to do. Now, firing the Earth grid is going to give us, they called it a catapult experience. So it's going to be like if we had meditated for 10 years. You're going to get like a boost in your frequency field as if you had been a meditator or somebody praying and meditating for 10 years. But it's going to come because this galactic center is open. Now, the Astrology Association in the United States contacted me and asked me where I got the date and the time, and I explained to them that, you know, it was given to me. And they said, well, this is like a perfect date for this happening.
Oh, really?
And they said you could never, if you had spent a lifetime looking for a perfect date for a spiritual event, you couldn't have found it.
And did I they said, say well, why?
Well, it just would have been too much to search, I suppose, you know, a million days.
What,
which
I mean, what about the date is, what's particular about the date?
Well, they explained to me that certain galactic centers were open that hadn't been open for hundreds of years. One of them was hadn't been open for 250 years, and this is the first time it was in this alignment.
This is what the light beam said?
Yes, but they didn't say it in the same way that the Astrology Association said. They said there is an opportunity in the cosmos for direct communication of energy from source, from your source, to catapult your Earth into a state of healing. But what the astrology people said to me was that all of these events were lined up perfectly, like this center hadn't been open for 250 years, will be open that day. And then there was two other centers in the sky that hadn't been open for 50 years and 75 years, and they will also be open on that day. So I didn't understand the astrology piece of it a whole lot, except the fact that they were very excited and told me that this was a wonderful day. And I said, well, then I guess they know what they're talking about because they picked it. I didn't pick it.
Right. Now, what's your website again so people can go to it?
It's www.firethegrid.com, and the website is laid out to tell you what happened to me, pretty much what I just told you, and then the problems that we're experiencing on our Earth, and then the solutions that these beings have given us as a first step towards a harmonious planet with peace and prosperity for everyone. This is possible, but we have to follow the instructions. I mean, when you get divine instructions, I followed the instructions and my son came back to me. And that's the thing that I try to tell people.
And that's what you're definitely getting across to me. So I think that's really amazing. How many people do you think, I mean, with a million hits on your website per month, how many people do you think are going to be participating in this one particular event?
I don't know. I guess it's hard to guess. We have over 50 countries involved. We have teams set up throughout the world. There's over 800 teams that are constantly recruiting more people. So not only are we spreading it through the website, but it's become a real underground word-of-mouth thing. And I don't really know. I know when I was told to gather them, I was told to gather a mass of humans such as the world has never seen and have them all unite their energy fields at one time, which is at 11:11 Greenwich Mean Time. In my time, it's going to be 8:11, and then on my website, it'll tell you which time in your zone.
Okay.
And so what we're going to do is share our energy field. Now, what we did with Evan's body was we shared an energy field with him by direct touch for 20 minutes at a time. But we can't obviously direct touch the cosmos or the Earth grid for that matter. Even though we're a part of it, we need to send it through our energy. So in giving 1 hour of our time, we will boost the energy field of all the humans on the Earth and the Earth itself. The same way we did with Evan, only different way.
So what does this mean for life on Earth, and how will life change if the vibration is raised? Do they say anything about that?
Well, they've talked about an evolution of time and that no change comes overnight, and that we must be careful not to set ourselves up with false expectations. This is only the start of a movement. And the first thing they're trying to do is establish enough humans on the Earth in a state where their frequency is open to being guided.
Okay.
Once there's enough of us with our frequency open to being guided, I think there's more to come then. You know, what do we do now that we're open? You know, how do we you know, make the next step? But I think that's coming. And I think many, many people around the world are hearing messages about and getting directions. But so many people, you know, don't want to talk about this. I certainly didn't want to talk about it. You know, if I didn't feel such an obligation to these beings, I would have just said, look, don't bother me. Pick somebody else. But I owed them a great debt of gratitude. And I said, okay, well, I'll do it. And here I am doing it. And I've been doing radio shows and giving talks and speaking tours that are, right now we have a speaking tour down the Eastern Seaboard. It starts in Norfolk and ends up in Chicago.
Wow.
These are people who want to hear, well, they want me to come and speak to them directly. I guess they want to hear it from the from the real McCoy.
So this is taking up a lot of your time at this point, huh?
I'm booked through the entire summer to speak and talk to people and different radio shows. So July 17th, it'll be all over. I won't know what to do with myself after that.
So are you going to write a book about this so people can get the full story?
It would be nice to write a book. I certainly have lots of ideas. I haven't started anything like that, and I certainly haven't put anything into place. And I guess that's primarily because I was directed that this project was all done for free. So that would never, you know, you can't very well do a book for free. But I would think that after this event that I might be able to share my story with the world in more detail so that, you know, I could cover all the questions. So hopefully.
Does your child remember anything about the experience?
He for a couple of months spoke to me of things that were definitely. He told me that God had held him the entire time he was in the coma, and that he was surrounded by angels, and that they were all telling him that he was fine and that everything was going to be fine, and he said he wasn't worried. Even though he was dead for over 30 minutes. No, I wasn't worried, he said. God told me everything was fine. But this was the first time I had heard the word God, and I really didn't understand how God and these beings went together. You know, that I've heard of people with spiritual happenings, and I've heard of people with UFO happenings. But I didn't understand, and I was very confused how the two of them went together. But the bottom line was, and from their explanation, there is a divine source that everything comes from. Now, you want to call it God, or you want to call it any other name that suits your heart, that direct source is where our initial energy forces came from. And these light beings are made from the exact same light as that originating source, as are we. So they want us to know our potential on this planet and that we have never lived in our full power. But it is possible to live in our full power, our full ability to manifest and create on this planet.
Did they say anything else about who they were? I mean, were they human beings, these beings of light? Or were they, you know what I mean? Where did they come from?
No, they've never given me any indication that they were human beings at any given time. And as best as I can see, they come from a galaxy set called the Pallades or the Palladians.
Oh, right.
They didn't use that name with me. They used a name with me, and they said they were Plejar. And when I Googled Plejar, that came up that was a term used for the Palladians.
Right, the Plejarians. Yeah, I've heard that.
But they call themselves Plejar.
Well, have you ever seen a UFO or anything like that?
When I was a small child, I had several encounters with things in my room. But I thought I dreamt them. But I did have several encounters with things in my room that I remember speaking to my parents about. And they said, oh, you were just having a dream. But that was all.
What kind of things? I mean, like figures.
I don't remember them. I don't remember them well. I just remember that I felt I had visitors in my room at one point, and I remember telling my mother that, you know, something was going on, and I thought something strange. But I don't remember the details of what I saw. Well, I was told it was a dream, you know. So you just
right.
Let it pass. But now, as I've gotten older, and of course since I've had this experience, I say, I wonder, was that some sort of early contact, you know, when I was little?
Right. So has any major media stuff, have you gone on like one of the major networks? Have they expressed any interest Because it sounds like you're getting more and more,
It's building. The momentum of it is building more and more and more, and we have a team of people constantly manifesting that the right people are going to come to us, and that the end goal is, like I said, to amass a group of humans such as the world has never seen, and they want us to have somebody in every corner of the earth.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if you got on Larry King Live or something like that. I really wouldn't.
Well, that'd be great if Larry wants to talk about all this. Yeah. But that's, you know, we're constantly sending out, and I say we as a team, we're constantly sending out the vibration that we want to bring the right people into this project that can share it with the world. Because ultimately that was what I was told to do, was to share this information with the world. And that's what I've done. And I don't defend myself, and I simply say, well, this is the information I've been given, and if it touches your heart and you feel truth in it, then wonderful. And if it doesn't, that's okay, too.
I'm sure
there's going to be enough of us. I already feel it to make this transition.
So how does your family feel about what you're doing and your friends? And has everyone been very supportive? Have you gotten nothing but positive reactions?
Pretty much, yeah, pretty much. My friends have seen such a difference in me as a human being that they can't see anything negative about this, because I went from black and dark and suicidal and miserable. You know, I was full of despair all the time. So now I'm full of joy and optimism and hope and love. And if this is the end goal of firing the Earth grid, well, then I think we should all do it. Because if it lifts our field to this, if it lifts your field to one-tenth of where my field is right now, man, we should do it. Because it's awesome to live in this frequency of acceptance and just knowing that there's communication there and that there's assistance there and that we're, you know, we're being guided.
Right.
But not only that, it's the actual frequency feels better. You don't find the negative. You find that positive. You find the joy in everything. And that's how I have personally changed. And I can feel it every day, because even when, you know, a guy cuts you off in the street and the first thing we do is call him a name, you know, stupid so-and-so, right? I mean, that's our first reaction. But if we keep our field up and we acknowledge the fact that that guy there might be having a hard time, his kid might be sick and he's running to the hospital, or who knows. So what we send out is good thoughts to this person, instead of negative thoughts. It all comes down to creating a positive energy field, because a positive energy field is at a much higher megahertz than a negative energy field. So when your world is black and dreary, you're really down in the low, low megahertz of being. And when your life is filled with joy and optimism, you live at the highest source of frequency. And that's the one that's going to change the earth. When enough of us are living at that height.
Right, and at that high frequency, I think it's easier to manifest things and create.
Exactly.
Right. So we only have like a few more minutes. Is there anything that you want our listeners to know in particular about this upcoming date or this project that we haven't already covered, I mean?
I guess the biggest thing I invite people to do, and remember, it's not my job to change anybody's mind. It's only my job to offer a fissure of possibility. That's it, a fissure of possibility. And what do you have to lose by giving this a try? It's only an hour of your time. And I'll even go one step further. These beings said to me that they understand the limitations of our humanity, meaning they know that we probably can't get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to meditate or pray or to sit in our easy chair and watch the ball game.
Right.
They understand the limitations. So what they said is what they're looking for, the power of your intention. And if we write a note to ourselves, so what I want you to do is acknowledge that within you is a being of light, is an energy creature from the divine source. And what you want to do is speak to it and say, you know what, I'm giving you permission to connect with source during this hour while I sleep. And it's my intention to send my love and joy and bliss out into the world, lift my own field, and assist with lifting the Earth's field. And go to sleep. No, that's not the best way to do it. But at least they're giving us, who can't get out of bed, you know, a way to also participate. So if writing yourself a note before you go to bed, what do you have to lose?
Right. So what time is it for you? What time is it for you? You said it was like 1 a.m. at 11?
No, 11:11 Greenwich Mean Time. Now that's in England. Is 8:11 in Nova Scotia?
Is that going to be
so? That's where
PM?
I live.
8:11 p.m.
That'll be a.m.
Oh, okay. 8:11
yep.
a.m.
And of course, as it goes across, you guys are in the wee mornings. I think you're going to be like
so
before 5 a.m.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But we've got the website set up now. We've done a lot of research in the GMT time thing, and even though it doesn't seem quite right, there's a lot of rules about GMT that have to be applied. And so we've had a guy research it and set it up, and he did a widget for our machine, our website, and the time is right for every country.
Wow.
So all you have to do is go in and plug in, and it comes up in blue letters with your time.
Wow. Well,
yep.
It's an amazing story. I'm really excited to be a part of this, and I think it's going to be an amazing success.
Well, I'm glad I could share it with you.
Yes, thank you so much, Shelley, for being on the show. Our guest tonight has been Shelley Yates. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads, and I'm your host, Preston Bennett. And our guest, Shelley Yates, has announced this amazing project, Fire the Grid. That's your website, www.firethegrid.com. And people are invited to go there to learn more about this. And thank you, Shelley, for coming on the show. It's been amazing.
Well, I enjoyed it a great deal, Preston. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, everyone.
Okay.
That's our show tonight. I hope you can all join us next week when we have Eric Altman, and we're going to talk about Bigfoot. Until then, have a wonderful evening.